Let's start with some tough love, all right? Ready for this? Here goes.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
At some point, they engaged in genetic engineering and mixed their genes with the genes of Homo erectus.
Because these guys own our government. They spent our money, and they own not only the government, but they own you. You are their property.
I said, we're going to war with Iraq. Why? He said, I don't know.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
Did you think you could hide in plain sight? Life goes on nothing without you. But a hundred ones don't care about you.
Okay, everybody. Today, I've got another episode of Flat Earth School. And on this one, I have an extremely special guest. I have Deborah from Deborah Gets Red Pilled. Adam comes on, so it hopefully helps her feel a little more comfortable, and he puts his little two cents in there every now and again and speaks up, but he's mostly quiet and lets me and Deborah have a conversation, and it was spectacular. So I really hope you guys enjoy this one. It was not the visceral argument that I had on the first episode of Flat Earth School. This went way better. Deborah was way more calm-natured, way more open-minded, and man, my respect has grown even more for her. I mean, I was already very respectful of her because of what she's willing to do and how her thought process works, but this just made me like her even more. So, without further delay, you guys, enjoy this one. It was a good one. All right, here we are. Welcome back to Hidden in Plain Sight. I am your not-so-humble host, Moral Bob. And tonight we have another edition of Flat Earth School. And I welcome some very, very special guests, Deborah and Adam from Deborah Gets Red Pilled. This is an honor, really it is, Deborah, for me to have you on the show and to be able to talk to you about something, because I've listened to y'all's show for a while, and you know, to be able to be interacting with y'all is going to be great.
Adam's
happy to be here.
Adam's very quiet, I was going to say.
This is for you. I just came to make you feel a little more comfortable. I'm going to be a fly on the wall for this one.
Yeah, so Adam, if you have any comments, feel free to say whatever, man. We'll just kind of play this thing by ear and see where it goes. And yeah. I want to tell you, Deborah, I am not here to change your mind. If we end this podcast and you haven't changed your mind, it's not that I haven't done my job. I don't want that to really be the outcome. Okay. I want you to just question and have an open mind and then go out into the world with what I'm going to give you and just start looking around. And just, I give observable things. I think you've talked to Flat Earth Dave, right?
Uh-huh.
And his presentation is phenomenal. But I think it's a little too complex. We don't have to be that complex. We got to keep new ideas as simple as possible so people can wrap their heads around them. When you start throwing out numbers like 1.2 million miles an hour and, you know, 8.7 billion miles a year and all of these giant things, people just tune out. And I like to stay here in kind of reality and provable, tangible things.
That sounds good.
I want to start with, having talked to Flat Earth Dave, do you lean in a direction? Are you still convinced that we live on a ball, or are you
not sure? Just, you know, I'm up there in my years, and you know, my entire life, I just accepted without question that we live on a globe, that we live on a sphere. And you know, it's kind of like your foundation for whatever you believe. You can take some things without question. And that's one of the things that I took without question. We lived on a globe. So it's really hard. How can you all of a sudden tell me that we live on a flat plane when, you know, since Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue? I mean, I know that's...
So they say.
But, you know, I bought it hook, line, and sinker. It's like if you were to tell me something else that is just so basic to my beliefs.
It's taught to us at such an early age. I mean, from mobiles over cribs to stories that are read by your parents, you know, about space and the solar system. And then early in school, you're learning about the planets, and it's just constant. And if you start looking around, and you can do this with all sorts of different things, but if you look specifically for the globe, if you start pointing out every time you see a globe, every time they say globe or something like that, and you just think propaganda, you're going to end up saying propaganda like 100 times a day because it's everywhere.
And I'll have to start paying attention.
It's this constant thing that they do in commercials and business logos and movies and everything. You're just inundated with this propaganda that we live on a ball. And there's an idea to it, right? So a lot of people have a visceral reaction to this topic because this is the biggest lie. This is the most in-your-face thing. And it's the one that, like you said, everybody just takes as fact without question. You know, they're just like, we live on a ball. We live on a ball and we're hurling through space. Like, that's just a fact. And when you take that away from them, there's this, I think it's an ego thing. Like, you're going into self-protection because being in a really vulnerable place where you're no longer literally grounded on a foundation anymore. Like, somebody has yanked the rug out from under you and you're going, wait a minute, your whole world can collapse. So it's kind of, you know, this instinctual reaction to be like, no, no. I mean, my first episode I did with William Ramsey, and he did not react very well. And I was just like, and which I didn't expect because he's a pretty mellow guy. And he basically said I was insane and had no grip on reality. And
I've never heard William Ramsey react in that manner to anything before.
Right? It's weird. And
it's crazy because he believes
so much
that people that who believe in a globe Earth that would get mad at flat Earth would get mad at him for saying.
Yeah. Well, he just released a book called Global Death Cult, where, you know, he's talking about the death cult that rules the world. Like, you know, there's this evil cabal of people that run the world that are possibly demonic. And, you know, the globe being a lie is too far. You know, yeah. I even
9/11 isn't an issue for him.
Right. Well, I got him to admit that if his wife lied to him just 10 times, he would never believe anything came out of her mouth again. And I'm just like, why don't you apply that same standard to the government? You know, you do to your wife, you know, so why wouldn't you just immediately question anything that they're presenting? Because NASA controls everything when it comes to space, the globe, everything. So the government controls everything. They've got a budget of $53 million a day. They consume more helium than all other sources on Earth combined. So all helium consumption combined, NASA consumes more than that. Oh, and they have more graphic designers than Disney. And so, you know, with that kind of budget and that kind of power, they can do anything. I mean, they can do anything. They can make anything look real. So
at some point, I don't want to jump ahead, but at some point, will you explain again why they would want to push this?
Okay. Yeah. We can go
and
there.
That's
a good place to kind of start. And then I'll ask you, and then you can tell me if you have any questions about Flat Earth that you can't figure out. And we'll go down that direction. So the reason for the lie is kind of multi-layered. They never do anything for one reason. They always have multiple reasons. You know, if it is a demonic, like if it is the fallen, if it is Satan that is controlling the world, I forget what the movie was, but there's a quote, the greatest trick that the devil ever pulled was convincing you that he didn't exist.
So Usual Suspects.
That's what it is. Right. So if the devil can convince you that God doesn't exist by us being on a ball hurling through space, you know, in infinite nothingness. He eliminates God and the devil all at once, because the Bible says that God created earth on pillars, solid like a foundation, not to be moved. So earth is supposed to be, he said he made it like a step stool. Step stools are a circle lying flat.
I'm having trouble visualizing.
So, well, you know, like an old step stool that you would just put under your feet. It's just a, you know, the top part is a circle on four legs.
And those are the pillars.
Right.
Okay.
And those are the pillars. But the other reason that they've done this, there's two more reasons that are really big. If they convince you that we're hurling on a ball flying through space, but you can't feel that experience, then you no longer trust your own senses. You know, it goes to Edward Bernays's coined phrase, trust the expert. It's like, well, yeah, I can't feel it, but the experts say we're moving. You know, the experts tell us that we're traveling through this, and the experts say that we're just too big, so we can't really feel it. But the experts also say that we're spinning so fast that it's throwing water off of the earth so fast at the equator that there's a 14-mile hump of water that's never been observed. You know, so what are we supposed to believe by these experts? And then if they're able to fool you to this level where you observe everything flat, you observe everything not moving, but you think that we are hurling through space at millions of miles an hour, they can trick you of anything. If this is the biggest lie, and if they can get you with that, they can trick you into anything. They can make you believe that viruses are real, that you can spread it by touching people, that, you know, 5G radio waves are safe, that they're not manipulating the weather, even though they're doing crazy stuff, and that their power is justified. You know, they can convince you of anything because they've gotten you over on the most ridiculous lie ever. And that's exactly what it is. Once you start really looking into flat Earth and looking into everything that is around the globe model, it falls apart really quickly when you really start digging and questioning. So
the pillars that you mentioned, are those just, I mean, is that just an ancient way of explaining it, or are there actual pillars, and what are they standing on, or what are they for?
They could be standing on something and the abyss could be below us. Like, I simultaneously can prove the earth is flat, but I also think that there is something below us. So I simultaneously hold the hollow earth theory as well. So I think there could be something below us. So maybe it's the abyss, maybe it's the underworld, maybe it's hell. Who knows? Who knows, really? Okay. There's no way to prove it. The deepest hole they've ever dug was 7.6 miles in Russia, and they hit what they described as an impenetrable barrier. They couldn't get through it. It was melting drill bits when they tried to go through it, and they made no damage to it. And the Bible says there is an upper firmament and a lower firmament. Now, take that for what it is. I don't necessarily, you know, take the Bible as, you know, full cloth. I'm not, you know, I don't deem myself a Christian or, you know, a follower of God of anything, but I think it is a historical book that we can take reference from.
Okay.
So Deborah, 7 miles into, and if the earth is a globe, 7 miles into the earth's crust wouldn't be through the skin of an apple if you were making an equivalent.
Right. Yeah, it's barely even, it's like a paper cut or just like a rash. Like it's just, it barely gets through because the earth is like the radius of the earth is like almost 4,000 miles. So 7 miles is nothing comparatively to the size of the earth. So we have no idea. The idea that gravity is created by mass is a theory. It can't be proven. It's never been proven. I mean, I remember when I was going to school, we learned that gravity was centripetal force. It was the fact that we were spinning so fast that the force was being pulled to the center. And then in about middle school, which would make sense because I think they drilled that hole in Russia in the 80s, maybe. Maybe it was earlier than that. But
why were they drilling it? Just for scientific exploration?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I believe so. They were trying to test what was in the center of the Earth. And when they hit 7.6 miles, they just couldn't go any further. Just stopped. Dead stop.
Gosh, if they can get a man to the moon, you'd think they could drill through the Earth.
That's a whole other conversation.
She doesn't believe that we went to the moon.
No, yeah, exactly. If you're there, then yeah, the moon's a funny one too, because there's literally no evidence that we went.
Alex Stein convinced her.
Yeah, it's pretty compelling. And you get to a point where it's like, all right, well, somebody's got to convince me that we went. Like, where's the evidence that we went? It's just not there anymore. So do you have any really hard questions that are really like, well, I can't answer this, so this is a big deal?
It's been explained to me before, but I can't say that I really grasped it. That, if I'm recollecting correctly, that around the edge, we're not going to fall off because that's actually Antarctica. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, ma'am. It's the highest point on Earth. It's got a 9,300-foot elevation.
So, okay. And they've declared it off limits. Nobody is allowed to go tromp around Antarctica. Right. Because
not without permission.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You can go, but you can only go to... They fly you in and you can go to like one spot.
Yeah. And you,
but you can't.
There's supposedly some people that have crossed one side to the other on dog sled. It's all propaganda BS, because it doesn't really, it's not like one continuous thing. There's really no way to know where they went, you know, or even where they are when they did it. I mean, they could have done it in Siberia and just said they were at the South Pole. You know, they could have just made up everything about it. When you have a $53 million a day budget, you can do all sorts of things. You know, you can manipulate history itself.
So nobody has been able to fly over that part of the Earth. And if you were to sail there, you would just be blocked. Has somebody ever really made an effort?
Yes.
To disprove this?
There's been some journalists and stuff that have gone down there. And, you know, they've videotaped it. They're like, okay, we're going. And as soon as you go beyond the lower 60th parallel, they will send airplanes. They'll send warships. They have, you know, people have been turned around like, no, you're not authorized to be here. You need to leave. That's why there's bases. There's military bases in, you know, the tip of South America, in New Zealand, in, you know, South Africa. There's military American military bases everywhere down there.
All American. It's not.
No,
it's UN controlled generally.
Okay.
But it's, a lot of it is American financed.
Okay.
This is a better way of saying it, you know.
But Captain Cook made an effort.
Yeah. And there's some guys, when I talked to William Ramsey about it, he showed me some graphic of like seven people that have gone all the way around Antarctica. And I just told him, I said, man, I'd have to look into, you know, captain's logs and how far they traveled. I said, because Captain Cook, and he was like, yeah, that's the guy that abandoned and didn't go all the way around. I said, yeah. And he logged 60,000 miles and didn't make it all the way around. Like, so I want to see the mileage all of these other people did. If it's a smaller amount of mileage, then why is the discrepancy? Was Captain Cook a liar? Like, then we have to get to the bottom of that. I said, I'm not just going to accept something you found on Google.
When was Captain Cook's excursion?
Oh, that was 1600s. I'd have to look. I haven't looked in a while. It was a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
It was a long time ago, but he kept very immaculate records, and you can look at his records, and he sailed like 60,000 miles and didn't make it. And this was a guy that went everywhere. This was somebody that was an explorer that, you know, was very well versed on how to get around. You know, this wasn't some amateur.
Uh-huh. He first recorded crossing the Antarctic Circle in 1773.
1700s. Okay. 1700s. Okay. I wasn't too far off.
No.
Yeah, he's, you know, his logs say, I think, 65,000 miles that he sailed, something like that. And he didn't he had to turn because he like ran out of supplies. He didn't have enough supplies to keep going.
Okay, so back to the, I've sidetracked you, back to the physical. Barry.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, Flat Earth Dave describes it pretty well. He says it's like the edge of a lake. You don't fall off of a lake. You just get to the shore, you know, and that's what Antarctica is. Antarctica is the shore of Earth. It's like the shoreline.
Okay.
And there's supposedly land underneath it. There's islands and there's supposedly a passageway that may open or close, but that goes deeper into, you know, more theoretical stuff. You know, if there's land beyond the ice ring, you know, and maybe that's what Tartaria is, we could go down a whole nother rabbit hole with all of that stuff. But as far as Earth being flat, like, it's provably, measurably, observably flat. You know, if you take away NASA, if you take away government information, like, I want to take people and just sit them down in a field and go, okay, prove we're on a ball without anything but what's right here. Prove it. You know nothing about nothing, but you think we're on a ball, prove it.
And how do you disprove it?
How do you disprove it? That's pretty easy. We can see entirely too far. We can see well beyond where we're supposed to. The only thing that blocks us is what's called atmospheric opacity. And it's when the atmosphere gets so thick, you just can't see any further. Like, and you can test this theory in your everyday life. When you look out into the horizon, you see things start to get opaque as they get further away. And when something's just like 10 miles away, it's very opaque and hard to see details. Now imagine something 100 miles away, you're not even going to be able to see because the atmosphere has gotten so opaque, it's just blocked it out.
Opaque because what creates it appearing to be opaque?
The atmosphere, all the gases that are in the atmosphere just give it an opacity over a certain distance. Because it's just layers and layers and layers of thickness. It gets to be kind of like a fog at distance.
Okay.
And then you have the limit of the atmospheric opacity, and then you just have human vision limits. Like, we can't see forever. Uh-huh. You know, it's just not possible. You can stand on one end of a hallway that's 100 feet long, and you can't see the other side. Like, the ceiling and the floor come together, you know, and touch each other before the end of the hallway on really long hallways, right?
Okay.
You've seen that before?
Yeah.
Like, you've stood at the end of a hallway and you can't see the other end of the hallway and it looks like the ceiling and the floor touch. They don't actually touch. If you start walking down to the end, you're not going to have to start hunching down. You know, what's touching the floor will eventually be over your head.
Right.
And that's the same when it comes to clouds and the sun and everything. It's the same effect. It's just human vision. No matter where you stand, whether it's in your living room, which you can test this in your living room, you can stand in one corner of your living room and look down the wall, and it looks like the wall comes up. If you look at your baseboards, they come up to your eye line. And that's just how vision works. Like, I'm looking at you and it looks like your two ceiling points behind you are coming down to a point, but they're not actually coming down to a point behind your head. They're actually above your head.
Yeah.
You know, it just visually looks like it's coming down to a point.
Okay. Now I understand that.
So anything that's the way that our vision works on a flat plane is anything above us, as it gets further away, is going to start lowering in our vision. And anything below us is going to start coming up. And they're always going to meet at our horizon point, which is just the limit of your eyesight. That's all the horizon is. The horizon is just the limit of your eyesight coming together.
Okay.
That's it. And it rises as you go up in elevation. You can go up 10, 20, 30, 40,000 feet, and the horizon will rise with you the entire time. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't happen on a ball. On a ball, you would get to a certain elevation, and because it exponentially falls away from you at a certain elevation, you would have to look down to see the horizon, and you never do. All you have to do is look straight, and you will always see the horizon.
I'm just going to be devil's advocate
Sure.
It's not because any curvature of the earth that we can't see.
Right.
It's our vision.
Right.
Okay. All right. That wasn't really devil's advocate. It was just to clarify.
Clarity. Yeah.
You're allowed to ask questions, so, Deborah. Yeah, you're allowed to argue too.
You can argue. You can present questions to me. Well, hey, how do you explain this? Because I can explain a lot of different things. Like, let's take the sun, for instance. So the sun, we're told, sets over our heads from west to east, or east to west, and it makes a 180-degree arc into the sky and goes from the point on the horizon on the east side to a point to the horizon on the west side, and that's supposedly just the perfect arc, right? That's how it's supposedly doing. We're apparently falling over backwards at 1,000 miles an hour. That's the narrative. We're spinning to a point to where we're spinning backwards, and we're watching the sun, you know, spin as we spin. Okay, so we spin this way, and the sun's here, and so it gives the visual idea that it's going down, right? So again, it's atmospheric opacity. You can do this experiment on a flat table. You can go to Lowe's with just a smartphone and another person and some bricks. You can prove that when you draw things away, you know, like I can draw my finger away, if I can get it lined up with the camera correctly, like I can draw my finger away straight back and it looks like my finger is going down and behind my other finger. And it's just going straight back. But it looks like I'm taking it down. Well, that's what the sun's doing. The sun's just getting further away. And it's as it's going away, it's like the ceiling in the hall, really long hallway. It's just getting further away. So it gives the visual look of it going down, but it's not actually going down. And what you're seeing, you know, when the sun goes down under the horizon, that's only a few miles away. It's just the limit of your eyesight, because you can drive a few miles and go watch the sunset again, and drive a few miles and watch the sunset again, and do that, you know, forever if you wanted to. But it's just going away. And then atmospheric opacity is what thins the sun out. And then it eventually just goes away because the atmosphere is so opaque that it just vanishes.
So what is our relationship to the sun and all the other planets in our so-called solar system? What are they? Are they?
We don't know. We have no idea. Everything that we've been presented from NASA is admitted photoshopping and digital images. They will never call them pictures. They'll never call them photographs. They are composites. They're images. You know, these are admitted, you know, basically cartoons from NASA. They say they you know, they have to Photoshop them. And, you know, it's all fake. Everything that NASA presents us is completely fake.
So going back, was it Copernicus that told us about the planets?
The stars move, and some of them move at different rates than others. That I don't disagree with.
Yes.
The firmament, why they spin the way they spin, is to keep time. So,
are we spinning?
No.
At all?
We can't even move. Like, the people that believe in the globe will also tell you there's no way to measure spin. Like, you can't measure it. Like feeling wise, there's no instrument on this entire planet that can measure the spin from Earth. It's just assumed by the things that happen in the sky. But the thing about the sky is that the stars don't change. The stars have been the same possibly for hundreds of thousands of years. And in that time, with the globe model, we've traveled potentially trillions of miles, all in opposite directions, yet the stars have never changed.
Okay, I'm...
Right, that's when it gets into the weirdness, because of big numbers. So to kind of give you an idea to what I mean, so if say, all of history is even just 100,000 years for all of human history, recorded history, let's say recorded history, because there's some things that have been dated, you know, around 100,000 years old. And so supposedly we can prove that things are 100,000 years old, some of the things that were written down. So in 100,000 years, if we've traveled, say, we'll round down 8 billion miles a year for 100,000 years, years. That's trillions of miles that we've traveled through space and everything, you know, supposedly because of the globe narrative, everything is expanding like a balloon in all directions, almost at the same rate of speed. And if that's happened and we've traveled trillions of miles over 100,000 years, why haven't the stars changed?
Are they always in the same position in the sky? I mean,
it rotates. So there's actually 13 cycles of the stars, because our original calendar that we're supposed to have is a 13-month calendar that's 360 days. And when you line that up, it lines up perfectly to the moon cycles. So the stars, the sun, the moon, this was all given to us to keep time. So the sun keeps track of the days, the moon keeps track of the weeks, and the stars keep track of the months. And that was always intended to be our clock.
Huh.
And you can track different seasons and everything with that. And they used that stuff to know when to plant food, when to harvest food, you know, when to start getting ready for winter, everything. You know, they've always used the stars to kind of navigate their time cycle.
Oh, what the Farmer's Almanac uses?
Yep.
Yeah, everybody takes the Farmer's Almanac at its word, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you can time things pretty accurately, because if you walk outside, you walk out your front door and you count your steps and look up. If you look up and map the stars that are directly above you right now, and then in exactly 1 year, you do exactly the same thing, the exact same stars are going to be in the sky. Yet we have traveled almost 9 billion miles.
We haven't. They have.
No, all of us have. The stars have. We have. Everything has traveled 8 billion miles, all in different directions. Yet the stars are exactly the same year after year.
I'm confused. I'm missing something here. If we're not moving.
Exactly.
We are moving. We're not.
The sky is moving. The sky spins, and you can track it around the North Star, around Polaris. You can watch the stars spin around Polaris.
But the Earth is hurtling through space.
Supposedly.
Okay.
So they say.
But you're disproving that.
Right. By the fact that the stars never change. It is nonsensical to think that everything is traveling away from each other at 9 billion miles a year. Yet nothing changes. If you just walk by a painting on your wall, you're going to notice it changing no matter the rate of speed that you go by it, right? And if you're like, you know, a lot of people will say that it's parallax. And parallax is the phenomenon that when something's really far away, it doesn't look like it's moving. Like when you see an airplane in the sky, you know the airplane is moving, but it doesn't look like it's moving. Uh-huh. But if you watch it long enough, you'll see it moves places in the sky, right? Yeah. So the idea that, you know, parallax is to explain it doesn't make any sense, because the stars still haven't changed. At some rate, even if it was a slow rate, they would change. The Big Dipper would start altering in dimensions. You know, Orion would start spreading out. You know, these constellations would start changing. Slowly, but trackably, you know, even if it was some parallax. And then you have what's called the inverse square law of light. So the inverse square law of light is, if you double the distance between you and a light source, you diminish the light by 75%. And that's just a repeatable, provable fact. It's called the inverse square law of light. And it's if you half the distance, if you cut the distance in half from a light source, you increase it by 4 times. So that's the math, or 3 times. So if we were to take the sun and put it right up next to the Earth, and the sun took up the entire horizon, and then we take it 93 million miles away, and it's the size of like a quarter held at arm's length.
Okay.
And that's 93 million miles away. That's only 8 light minutes away. 8 light minutes away. And if you took that and doubled it again, you would diminish it again down to just a tiny, tiny, like the size of a pea in the sky. And the light would be diminished by 75%. So we would be a mostly dark Earth at just 16 minutes away. And then if you did it again, it would be like a speck, like we see stars in the sky, and we would have nighttime all the time. We would never, it would be freezing cold, apparently, and it would be nighttime constantly. And that's only 24 light minutes away. And they're telling us that the stars that we see are hundreds of light years away.
Okay.
It's just not real. Like, it's not possible for that light to travel that whole way. They say light never stops, but it's just provably false. Because you can only see, and here's another flat Earth proof, you can see lighthouses up to 40 miles out to sea. The amount of curvature over 40 miles is like 2,000 feet. So it would be impossible to see a lighthouse 40 miles away if we were on a globe.
It should be
you'd have the lighthouse here and the ship here. And you just, the light would be going out here and the ship would never see it. There would be over a quarter mile of curve between the lighthouse and the boat at 40 miles. But if you go 50 miles, you can't see the light anymore. The light dissipates through the atmosphere and it can't go any further. Like, the idea that light is coming from hundreds of millions of light years away or hundreds of light years away is just asinine. It's just completely insane, you know, because they'll simultaneously tell you that light bends around planets and then how does it keep going in the same direction if it's bending around planets? Wouldn't that alter its trajectory eventually and then cause it to not be able to be seen? Or, you know, each time it curved around something, the light power would get weaker. And it would eventually, even if it was curving around stuff, it would eventually get so weak you couldn't see it. So I'm more of the biblical ideology that stars are just in the firmament. The Bible says that God separated day and night and made a light for day and a lesser light for night. And the stars and the moon are the lesser lights for the night. And it's also for navigation, timekeeping.
So, all right, we're a flat plane. The sun's over here. And then it's moving.
Right.
So it's down here and that's nighttime. And then it comes back around this way. Am I? Okay.
Yep. All right. if you think about the words that we use, right? So if you have the upper 30th parallel on the globe, apparently, you know, we got the ball, North Pole, the top part is the upper 30th parallel. It's called the Arctic Circle. And that's because on a flat plane, the sun arcs around it in a circle. And then you have the lower 30th parallel, that is the Antarctic, and the sun anti-arcs away from it.
I'm missing that.
It's arcing away, so it's an anti-arc. Because instead of arcing, instead of being convex, it's concaved.
If so that makes instead sense. Of this, it's
right.
that.
Right. Because it's arcing away from you instead of arcing around you. It's like if you took two concentric rings, right? And you stood, you know, in the center of this one, it's arcing around you. And if you stand on the outside of this one, it's arcing away from you.
Okay.
You see, so the arc's going in a different direction away from you from this point to this point, instead of coming closer to you from this point to this point.
I'm still not sure. I don't think I'm following.
It's just about the words that we use and how they call things.
All right.
So if you're standing on the North Pole, you see the sun constantly arcing around you. Okay.
Okay.
So imagine it like this. The sun's arcing around you. Okay.
Okay.
And then if you're standing there and the sun is doing, you know, if you're standing in the Antarctic, it's coming and then going.
Okay.
So here, if you were standing and it was circling around you, you could see it all the time. Here, you see it and it goes away. So it's making an arc away from you instead of an arc around.
Around you. Okay. Right.
So it's an anti-arc, Antarctic. Okay. And that's literally what the word means.
Huh. What about eclipses?
Eclipses are interesting because the shape on the moon shouldn't be as defined as it is, because you have a light source that's supposedly 93 million miles away. Okay. And then the moon is another 240,000 miles on the other side an eclipse is when the moon gets in the way. So you get the moon coming in front of the sun like this and blocking it, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. For a lunar eclipse, you get it to where the sun and the moon, or the moon is going in between the sun. And that's another thing, is that the sun is exactly 400 times further and 400 times bigger than the moon. The statistical likelihood of that is impossible. Like, it's statistically impossible for that to have just happened by circumstance, by some rock getting pulled into the gravity of Earth and spinning around, some random rock flying through space apparently got caught in Earth's orbit and it stayed there. That's the story. And that crazy happenstance that just the perfect amount of things had to have happened. The rock had to have been going the right amount of speed to be able to be pulled in and then stay at the same distance away, because gravity would eventually pull it into the Earth, you would think. But it doesn't. It stays constant. So all of these perfect things had to have happened. And then on top of all of those perfect things that had to have happened for the moon to get caught into the Earth's orbit and then never crash into it, because it's going at the exact rate of speed as the Earth is spinning, and it just creates this symbiotic relationship where the Earth moon never gets, well, the moon gets a little bit closer and then it gets further away, and then it gets a little bit closer and it gets further away. That's just nonsense, but still, but it goes around and it never crashes into the Earth.
So supposedly.
And then that happens, that miracle of things happen. And then the rock that happens to just happens to be the exact right size to block out the sun. So the statistical likelihood of all of those things to happen is just nonsense. Like, it's just so many things had to all be perfect in order for that to happen. But that being said, if you watch the moon go into the sun, it goes in at the Earth's shadow for like the eclipse. The Earth's shadow goes onto the moon the wrong way. And it's just way too defined. So you have this faraway light source, and then you have the Earth, and then like the moon, which is like this big over here, you know?
Uh-huh.
And supposedly, this massively bigger object with the shadow from a light that's super far away casts this perfectly defined little arc on the moon.
And what do you mean it's the wrong way?
It comes to, if the Earth is coming in and blocking in the right way, then the arc would be able to be, the arc comes in the wrong direction. It comes in like on the side. It comes in the wrong way that the Earth would be coming in to block the sun. And it does it all the time. Like, there will be times, every single full moon that you see, there is a time where the sun and the moon are 180 degrees apart, supposedly by the globe model. Yet the moon is still full. But it's on this side of the Earth, so we're told. And the light source is over here, 93 million miles away. Moon's over here, and it's still full. And what the globers will say is because the sun light bends around the Earth and hits the moon. That's the narrative.
Uh-huh.
That's why the moon will still be lit up in that instance, is because the light is going around the Earth and bending around it and hitting the moon. But for the moon, this dusty, dirty ball that they show us, to illuminate so bright that you can read by a full moon, it would be so bright, anybody standing on the moon when the sun was on it would be vaporized. That light, that heat would be so intense that it would vaporize anything on the moon. But then moonlight is measurably cold. Like moonlight is colder than moonshade. And that's measurable. People have run experiments where it's colder in moonlight than it is in moonshade. So it's a measurably cool light.
How do they measure that?
With just thermometers. You can take a thermometer in the light of the moon and a thermometer into the shade of the moon, and it's colder in the light.
Why is that?
I don't know. Things grow different in moonlight and sunlight. Like they affect things differently. Yeah, the moon's a really weird object. It doesn't track the same like the sun does either. You know, the sun, you can track its arc through the sky. Now, depending on the year, it's either traveling north or traveling south in between the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn. Like that's even in the globe model. It travels, and that's what gives us seasons is, you know, it's either traveling in between those on the globe model or it's traveling in between those on the flat Earth model. But that's what gives us seasons is the sun going further away from our location, theoretically. So, but the moon doesn't do that. The moon track makes a different path through the sky almost every night. I've been watching it a lot lately. And I've been like, I've gone outside the same time of day to like walk my dog. And I'm like, wait, why is the moon over there? It's not supposed to be over there. It was behind that tree last night. Like, why is it above the house? It shouldn't be there. And so the moon doesn't track the same.
Is there any acknowledgement about that in the scientific community?
I don't know. It's something that I just kind of recently was like, wait a minute. And I just haven't had a time to research, but it's observable. Like you can watch it where, you know, at 8 o'clock one night, the moon will be behind a tree. And then because the moon travels slower than the sun, it may take two nights for it to come back. But when it comes back, it's not going behind that tree again. It's going to be somewhere else.
It almost seems like it's been trained into us to not watch what's going on in the sky.
Well, yeah, that's why they tell you not to look at the sun.
I never look at the sky.
I look at the sky constantly. My son asked me, because I'll go outside and I'll be looking at the stars and I'm like, oh, crap, because something will just be there and then it'll just whoop and go away. And I'm like, did you see that? And he's like, man, you always see stuff. And I said, you know why? And he goes, why? I said, because I look. Yeah, I look at the sky all the time. My wife said that I need to start a sky journal because I look at it so much. Because I'm constantly, I can prove the Earth is flat and I still question it every day. I still try to disprove it because there's still things that I can't answer. It's only a few things that I can't answer at this point or at least have some kind of reasonable theory for. But I still question it every single day. And I look up and I'm like, well, I can't explain that. Like when the moon is in a phase that isn't full, and even when it's full, you can notice it. But the moon spins like this as it travels through the sky. You can watch the supposed craters that are on it that look like a rabbit. And that's why the rabbits have a lucky foot. It's because of the moon, because the rabbit only on the moon only has one foot. You can see it's two ears, but it only has one foot. That's where the lucky rabbit's foot comes from. Huh. But you can watch those craters spin as it goes through the sky. And what happens is when the moon is illuminated, say it's just a crescent, that crescent, as it goes through the sky, turns and tracks right behind the sun, not directly at it. It's right behind it. So if the sun is going down here, you know, the crescent will track about 2 or 3 degrees behind it. But it'll always be kind of pointing in its general direction.
I'm confused.
So, you know, there's different phases of the moon, right?
Yes.
So we have crescent, and then it's like a half moon, and then it's a full moon. So if you watch the illuminated side of the moon during its phase, it'll always be tracking as far as where the sun is in the sky. It'll be tracking about 2 or 3 degrees behind it, not pointed directly at it, which would be what you would think it would be on the globe model, because it's getting its light from the sun. So you would think that as the phase changes, it's pointing directly at the sun because that's what's giving it its phase. but it's not. It tracks behind it. Yeah. And that leads me to, as far as observable fact, and this is the one I really want you to hold on to, Deborah.
Okay.
And look at
my pencil ready.
And look at in your daily life.
Okay.
And I'm about to make a shirt that says this statement on it and this statement alone.
Okay.
Everything is parallel. Every object you see as far as the eye can see in every direction is observably and measurably parallel. You can look out at a vast horizon that's probably 50 miles from one side to the other. There's no observable curve, and every structure, every tower, every cell phone tower, water tower, tall building that you see is observably parallel to the other one, no matter how far they are apart.
Under the globe model, where should we start seeing curvature?
Even over a mile. Even over 1 mile.
So, Deborah, you could go up to Fort Mason or whatever there by the Golden Gate Bridge. You can look out over Oakland. You can look out over San Francisco, all the way down to the South Bay. That's a good experiment.
Yeah, Deborah, I'm sure you've seen plenty of skylines over your life, right? You've seen the Chicago skyline, at least in pictures and stuff. The New York skyline, Houston, maybe LA, you know, all of these big cities have very famous skylines, right? And some of these cities are over 10 miles long from one end to the other.
Yeah, how big is Manhattan? That's huge.
Right. Over just 10 miles, there would be 67 feet of curve. Your city skyline that you would see would be on an obvious curve.
Okay.
It would be obvious that it's curved. And big buildings that are 50, 100 stories tall, they would get bigger at the top, or there would be a correction in the building that tilted each pillar in a little bit so it didn't get wider. Because on the ball that we live on, there are no two points that share the same straight up and down and level. Even if they're this far apart, if something 4 inches apart is on a ball, this one on the right is going to have a different straight up and down and level than this one on the left. They're going to share different straight up and down and level. Now, depending on how tall they are, that may not be noticeable. But the taller, the higher you go, it's going to start spreading. You know, if this pillar is level and this pillar is level, at a very short distance up, maybe only 5-10 stories, you're going to see them start getting feet apart. And they're just going to get wider and wider and wider as they go up because they have to be level for it to be a solid structure. Or there needs to be something in the engineering of the building that says, because of that phenomenon, we need to tilt each pillar in at this angle, at this rate, going up this high to correct for it so our buildings stay square. It would be in the designs of big buildings, and it's not.
Okay, so if I'm in one of these big buildings, if it was designed to either go out or to go in, I would be aware of that.
You would either, if it was built where every pillar is straight up and down and level, it would be observably bigger at the top and measurably bigger at the top, or there would be clear corrections for that discrepancy in the engineering designs where they had to tilt each pillar in a little bit to correct for that separation to make it a solid square structure that didn't get bigger at the top. But there isn't anything like that in any of the designs of any building.
I stack rails for elevators all day long, Deborah. They're all straight up and down.
Yep. How do you even find level in two different places? I mean, like I'm in construction. I build swimming pools. And if I have a pool that's 40 feet long, on one end, it's going to have a different level than the other end.
If we're on a curved earth.
If we're on a curved ball. Even over 40 feet, it should be measurable. and it's not.
So, okay. Originally, I mean, going back, you know, ancient man thought we lived on a flat earth, and right. if Columbus was going to go sail, he was going to fall off. And then over years, the thinking changed, and now we're on a globe.
Right.
Why go from flat earth to globe?
Again, it's just to, it's to get you to believe a lie. It's to get you to not trust your senses.
But why?
It puts you in a mental status of not questioning anymore. And then they can control you.
In the 1500s, they already had this idea of controlling the population.
Oh, this goes back to the dawn of time. They've been controlling people for eons.
Who?
The people that rule the world. We don't know their names. I personally believe it's a bunch of ancient bloodlines, possibly stemming from the sons of Adam or the sons of Abraham.
How did they have the wherewithal, to decide we're going to control the population, we're going to control everything, and the way that we're going to set them crazy so they believe everything is by telling them we live on a globe instead of a flat plane?
Well, you know, we were created by gods, right? No matter what you believe, you know, belief is the enemy of knowing. So I have a bunch of theories and ideas, and you know, I can prove a couple things. You know, like everything else is just open for interpretation and questioning, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, who created this realm? I don't know, but it was definitely created. Why they created it? I don't know, but I have some ideas, and it's a mixture of things, right? So the Bible says that the abyss was created to enslave the fallen. So that's the biblical narrative, is that the abyss was created to enslave the fallen. I have a theory that this is the abyss, and we are possibly projections of the fallen that have been trapped in the firmament. But that's a whole nother rabbit hole to go
down. Yeah,
we've talked about it before, Deborah. Remember who came up with the Big Bang Theory?
The church.
A Vatican priest. Jesuit priest.
A Jesuit priest.
Yeah, specifically. Jesuits are in charge of the Vatican.
Yep. And the Vatican is, man, they have intentionally, the controllers, the people that control everything, specifically the narrative. Because that is the most valuable thing in this realm, is the narrative. If you control the narrative, you control everything. You know, if you can get people to believe in a, religion has been bastardized and co-opted by these groups. And you can see it in the Catholic Church big time. I mean, the Vatican owns a bunch of telescopes. The biggest one on Earth is called...
What's that one called?
Lucifer.
Yeah.
Ooh,
and it's owned by the Vatican. Yeah. So I think Catholicism has been specifically overrun by very demonic, evil beings.
God. And that's weird that I would say God.
If you look at the stage, like the pulpit in the Vatican, it looks like a serpent's head. So that's its own imagery right there of possible reptilians. From the inner earth, maybe the abyss is below us. I don't know. I've got tons of theories on all of that stuff. We could do a whole separate podcast about crazy theories about the controllers of the world and who they are and all of that, because it's an interesting topic. I've just gotten to the point where I trust nothing. You know, my lovely wife that I mention quite often on shows, she says, one lie exposed is enough to question every truth. And so as soon as you start exposing these things one at a time, it gets to a point where you're like, okay, I just don't believe anything the establishment, government, whatever, are telling me anymore. Like, it's possibly co-opted. It's possibly at least manipulated. And so that's where I've sat for a really long time, actually. I've only been you know, on the flat Earth train for about the last year and a half.
Huh. What about, what's the end result? What's the end game?
Control. I think they, it all just comes down to control, you know.
Complete and utter subjugation.
Yeah.
Why did they allow us to procreate as much as we have?
Because it made slaves. Them rich. It made them infinitely wealthy and powerful. Without that work, without them manipulating the market and commandeering us, I mean, I'm under the school of thought that, you know, social credit scores aren't coming to America. They're already here. They're in the, you know, they're called social security cards that give you your credit score. You know, so we already have that. You know, people say we are trying to stave off communism, but we're already at communism. What can you do that isn't, you know, controlled by the government? What do you own that can't just be taken by the government? We're already in full communism. They've just perfected it here. You know, there's a Johann Goethe said, there are no more hopelessly enslaved than those that falsely believe they are free. And so that was the real American experiment. Can we fool these people into thinking they're free and completely enslave them and control every aspect of their lives? And the answer to that is a resounding hell yes. They have managed to convince us that we are free. There's still people that walk around and go, well, it's a free country, even now, which is insane. Like, they've perfected it. You know, the people that are saying that the Great Reset is coming, that you'll own nothing and you'll like it, we're already there. You can't own anything that can't be taken from you. You're allowed to have your freedom. They're not freedoms, they're privileges. And they can be taken anytime they want to take them. I know for a fact. I mean, they have managed to take my kids away from me at certain points in time. Luckily, I've got all but one of them now, and I'm in the middle of a custody battle trying to get the other one, because my son was taken from me with no evidence, no nothing, no investigation, nothing. They just took him and gave him to his insanely toxic mother because she asked. That's it. They did zero investigation. She simply filed and asked, and they said, okay.
Without any, I mean...
Nothing. He was with me 70% of the time until she sued me for custody. And they just took him from me, even though I have a full family of six. You know, they're like, well, he deserves an education because I'm a homeschooler. And I said, we educate him. I said, he also deserves a family. Like, he deserves a family more than he deserves your education. And you're taking that away from him. And they just didn't even care. They just took him, gave him to his mom. And now I only get him first, third, and fifth weekends. So, yeah. So there's nothing that we have that they can't take from us. So we're already in this insanely controlled world. And then if you look at all things that they've done between Operation Mockingbird, Operation Fishbowl, to talk about the firmament, Operation Fishbowl was back in the 50s after Admiral Byrd discovered the other side of the Antarctic Circle and possibly discovered the firmament, the end of the firmament, maybe, they started trying to blow holes in it through Operation Fishbowl.
Do you think was that involved with High Jump?
Yes. Yeah. High Jump was possibly also teleportation through like a high portal or something. Maybe if you go up to a certain place, you could teleport. I don't know. I think teleportation is real and they're capable of doing it. There's been some people that have been involved with some super secret government stuff that has, you know, spilled the beans and said they saw people zip from one place to another, and like with some contraption. And that was as early as like the 50s.
Yeah, it makes you think that like if these guys like Gene Roddenberry would have been encouraged to do stuff like that in Star Trek to make this fantastical science fiction show. Well, it seemed fake, you know, when it's something that could really happen.
buckle up because CERN is about to fire up.
Yeah, I need to talk to somebody about that because I've never, looked into CERN. The last time it was going was before I was woken up. So I need to kind of figure out what all that means because people keep mentioning it and I'm behind the times.
So, you know, the biblical narrative is that the fallen were cast into the abyss mm-hmm. with the betrayer for 1,000 years.
The betrayer.
Satan, the original fallen, Lucifer, whatever you want to call him. There are a bunch of different names just for basically opposition, you know. And they say the apocalypse is coming. But again, the words that we use have meaning. Apocalypse just means a change.
Just means like the unveiling, right?
Yeah. Just the revealing of something.
Yeah, the revealing.
So I think something is coming and they are trying to stop it. And CERN, you know, maybe they're trying to open the abyss. Maybe they're trying to stop whatever power is going to rewrite history again. Maybe it's a good power that white, you know, because history, there's a lot of evidence that history could have been rewritten multiple times. So, and God, I mean, if you're a Christian, you believe the biblical narrative, he's wiped the earth clean multiple times. I mean, and he said, you know, in the Bible, it says it will show it on the face of the earth, or he wiped him off of the face of the earth. You can't have the face of something that's a ball. Is there a face of a ball? Which side is it?
Huh.
So if you wipe something off the face of the earth, it's a flat object generally, you know, like the face of a watch, which I think we're just, you know, we're living in a big astrological clock. So it makes sense to use wording like face of the earth. Because we are like a clock.
Words have meaning.
Yep. If you start really looking into words, there's a lot of really tricky stuff. I mean, just the word government literally translates to mind control. Ment means mind and govern means to control.
Phew.
Yeah. That's what it's all about. Operation Mockingbird, they basically took over all media, movies, TVs, everything. They took over everything. You know, and that includes Disney. Disney worked with Wernher von Braun, who worked with Stanley Kubrick. And that's potentially how the entire NASA and moon landing thing got developed, was those three, you know, colluding in some, you know, dark corner of Disney World, you know, possibly the Club of 33, which is what was Walt Disney's exclusive club, you know, 33, the 33 levels of Masonhood and, you know, the 33rd level of Illuminati, you know, you pass the 33rd level of Masonhood and you get illuminated and you go into the Illuminati. So, you know, there's a lot of symbolism there as far as Disney and 33 and all of that, because he was very closely tied to Wernher von Braun and Stanley Kubrick.
Wasn't there some film studio that was like up Laurel Canyon or something like that? Mm-hmm. I remember reading about filmed.
Yeah, I forget what it's called, what that studio is called. I think Jared Leto lives there or something now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's somebody like that.
Huh.
Somebody bought it.
Did Aleister Crowley or one of his acolytes or something work there or had something to do with it?
Yeah, well, I mean, Disney was a studier of Crowley. So Disney is a Crowleyite.
Yeah, all those guys from JPL. Yeah. Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which was down there with in Anaheim. Pasadena.
Yeah.
All those guys were occultists.
Who was the other guy that was involved in that?
I
can't think of his name.
Parsons.
Parsons.
That's it, Parsons. Yeah. Yeah, Jack Parsons, Walt Disney, Wernher von Braun. So
it was all created and it was all done to put this illusion, this veil over us. So we just live in an illusion. You know, we already live in a simulated reality. You know, I mean, all you have to do is look around and you see people walking around with masks and constantly scared of other people and air. And that person doesn't live in the same world that I live in. We live in parallel universes. Because they are scared out of their mind, you know, sticking needles in themselves with God knows what that's in them. They haven't researched it. They haven't looked at any of it. They're not cautious. I don't understand that. And then they're still wearing masks, proving that they don't trust what they just jabbed in their arm. And that person doesn't live in the same world that I live in. Okay. We don't share realities at all on any measure.
I have to say I am one of them.
Do you do it out of comfort?
I don't know.
So it's societal comfort? Because I think a lot of people do. You know, they're just going along because they don't want to be outcast. They don't want to be ridiculed. They don't want to deal with conflict. So it's just like, go along, get along kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I get it. But where do you draw the line with go along to get along?
Yeah.
I've asked that question
before. I've got an apprentice. Yeah. I just got an apprentice at work. And he's ex-military. And he's starting to wake up. And he took the Moderna shot, both of them, you know, because it was a two-stage shot as well. And he got myocarditis. And this is a healthy military dude. I mean, he's like 25 and like military healthy. Like, he's a stout young man.
And those guys have had hundreds of vaccines stuck in them.
Right. But I was talking to him recently. I said, I think the entire safety of vaccine narrative was started a long time ago. I think it was started with a lot of the polio vaccine, but oddly, polio shares the same survival rate as coronavirus with 99.98% chance of getting polio. And there were almost identical statistics. Polio had an 80% likelihood that you would get it and not even know you had it. You had a 20% chance of even knowing that you had it, and then the survival rate was 99.98%. And then when you dig into that, most of the people that got polio either got polio after they got the vaccine, or it was from pesticides sprayed on food, specifically DDT. And a lot of polio cases. Or
running behind a truck, spraying it in the streets because your parents told you it'd be fun.
Right. Well, and there was leaded gas at the time. And leaded gas was pumping out all of these toxic fumes into the atmosphere and making people sick. And they just called it something else. You know, a lot of the polio cases were misdiagnosed, and they were actually Guillain-Barre syndrome.
Yeah.
And that's what FDR had. They found out that FDR didn't have polio. He had Guillain-Barre syndrome. He had GBS.
I'm thinking back to somebody I knew when I was younger who had polio and, you know, had his legs were, you know, one of them was quite a bit shorter than the other.
Right. Well, it's impossible to know even if you have a virus. Like, we don't have reliable testing now. We certainly didn't have reliable testing 70 years ago. Or 100 years ago, when these polio things were going around. We didn't have reliable testing back then. It's impossible. We didn't have the science. By their history, we didn't have the science to isolate viruses. And as a matter of fact, viruses have never been isolated. There's not a single virus that's ever been isolated and identified. Not one. And when they do supposed isolations, they never run a control. And there's a doctor that actually started running the control experiments, because we'll go on a little bit of a tangent, but the experiment to isolate a virus is you take monkey kidney cells and you take a sample from a supposed infected person, because they haven't been determined to have it. It's just somebody that's sick and you think they're sick with a certain thing. So you take a sample from them, you inject it into the monkey kidney cells. And then they put antifungals and antibacterials and like a nutrient concoction into this mix and mix it all up. And then they wait like a week. They starve the cell culture and wait a week, and then they test. And if the cells have deteriorated, they say it's a virus. And that's it. But then they never run a control with a sample from somebody who is supposedly healthy, or no sample at all and still go through the same tests. But there's been a doctor named Tom Cowan who actually ran those experiments and determined that he got the same exact results with all three methods.
You know what happened to that guy?
He's silenced everywhere. He's got a book out, but you can't find his stuff anywhere. You can't find it anywhere because they don't want this truth coming out. They don't want any of this truth coming out. That's why Flat Earth is specifically targeted. They have removed over 10 million Flat Earth proof videos off of YouTube. 10 million. Flat Earth Dave alone had tens of thousands of videos wiped off of his page. Like, why? If it's so silly, why don't y'all just fly from Chile to New Zealand over Antarctica and prove us all wrong? Just be done with it and say, all right, we're done. But they can't, because that's not possible. It's simply not possible. I mean, that's the shortest flight. Airline pilots, you know, airline owners are constantly looking for ways to save money and increase their profits. If you could just hop over Antarctica in a few hours, why the hell would you take a 10-hour flight around the other way?
Yeah, the airlines just got the quarantine time cut in half.
Yeah. Every narrative they present to us, once you really start digging, falls apart very rapidly. It's why I never even worried about the coronavirus. I saw it coming. They tried it with the measles. They tried it with Zika virus. They tried it with H1N1. They tried it with Spanish flu. They tried it with AIDS. They tried it every single time to get this reaction.
They vaccinate kids for chickenpox nowadays.
Yep.
Why?
My 2-year-old is not vaccinated, and she'll get a little feverish every now and again, but she's also teething, so it's hard to know whether it's teething fever or something else, because it usually doesn't stick around for more than a few hours. But she's perfectly healthy. She's never been like really sick, and she's completely unvaccinated. You know, I have a theory that a lot of things that we see as just common illnesses are actually vaccine injury. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of evidence that ADHD, allergies, autoimmune disease, and things like that are vaccine side effects. And then you look at the companies that produce this stuff, and they're just horrible companies. Moderna has never brought a vaccine to market before because they could never make it through trials.
And who's paid out the largest criminal settlement in the history of the United States?
Pfizer.
Yeah.
For altering, you know, they can't be attacked for the vaccine itself. They managed to get a sweetheart deal with the government in 1986 that protected them against the administration of vaccines. But what they can still get caught on is fraud and bribery. And Pfizer has been caught bribing scientists, frauding data, like doing all sorts of stuff. $3.2 billion they paid out recently.
All three of them, Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, they're all convicted felons.
If you look at the vaccine courts and the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Effect Reaction System, reporting system, through the vaccine courts, even with vaccine companies being protected and there being a cap on payouts, to date, there's been over $4 billion worth of payouts through the vaccine courts due to vaccine injuries. $4 billion worth of payouts. And most of the people that get paid out have to sign a gag order. So then they can't talk about the vaccine injuries. So they don't want this stuff getting out. Vaccines were actually going away leading into 1986. And the vaccine companies successfully bribed the government and said they would have blood on their hands if they didn't protect them. So here's my question. If vaccines are so safe and effective, why do the vaccine makers have to be protected? That fact alone should make everybody question vaccines. Like, wait a minute. You hold no accountability if your product is trash? None. You could inject us with freaking anything you wanted. It could be arsenic, and we can't sue you for it? Like, what? That's insane.
Sounds like you want your kid's grandmother to die, Bob.
Well, I only have one grandmother that's alive. She's 98 years old. She had a stroke in the middle of coronavirus, hasn't taken any vaccines, and she's still kicking. And she hasn't worn a mask a single time. She's old school. She eats decent food. And, you know, she's somewhat healthy. But, you know, she's 98. Hasn't even gotten sick. Like, if that alone, you know, the people that are, you know, for lack of a better term, paranoid about this virus, they love to use anecdotal evidence. But when the anti-vaccine, anti-mask people use anecdotal evidence, it's called out. You know, so there's not even any consistency. People will say, well, I wear a mask and I haven't gotten sick. And it's like, well, I don't wear a mask and I haven't gotten sick. Well, that's not any evidence that, you know, masks don't work or, you know, viruses can't be caught. And it's like, well, why does my anecdotal evidence not hold any weight, but yours does? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I stick with facts on everything, whether it's flat earth or vaccines and viruses, I simply stick to provable fact. And the fact of the matter is that there's no evidence that we're spinning around in a circle hurling through space. There's none. There's no hard evidence of it. There's no hard evidence that viruses exist, and there's no hard evidence that vaccines do anything beneficial. None. And that's scientifically provable. If you take a vaccine and you don't get sick, it is impossible to prove it's the vaccine that caused you to not get sick. You could have just not gotten sick. You don't know. You could have not taken the vaccine and not gotten sick, but you'll never know because you took the vaccine, you know. And then the fact that the vaccine is supposed to be safe and effective, yet you have to continue to get boosters and still wear a mask.
And you can give it to other people.
And
now.
You can give it to other
and
people.
And you can catch it.
And you can catch it. I know people personally in my life that have gotten the vaccine and then texted me and was like, I got COVID. I'm like, how'd you do that? Thought you got the vaccine. And they've been knocked out. Like my buddy recently got the J&J vaccine and he just recently got COVID again.
Again.
He got it before he got the vaccine. Then he got the vaccine. Then he got it again.
Tested positive for it again.
I'm like, he got sick, but yeah. He's also the kind of guy that got the flu shot all the time and would get the flu at least once or twice a year. And he got the flu shot all the time.
Maybe he's got Flurona.
Yeah. Yeah. The Flurona.
That's coming.
You have to start looking at things. I believe in terrain theory. I think it's all atmospherical and potentially 5G and things like that that make us sick. You know, if you don't live a healthy life, you live around a lot of power lines and cell phone towers, your likelihood of getting sick is higher, especially if you live an unhealthy life and you eat, you know, garbage food and, you know, maybe smoke cigarettes and drink sodas and all of that. That's all insanely damaging to you. I don't get sick. I might get like a scratchy, I've got allergies, but so, you know, I might get a scratchy throat or something every now and again, but I use natural remedies and it's usually corrected within, you know, less than 24 hours.
I never get sick.
I don't get sick.
I got a runny nose, but
I'm also outside all day too, probably much like you are, Adam, you know, which I think, you know, the old adage, sunlight is the best disinfectant, but then they tell us sunlight can hurt us. Sunlight's only going to hurt you if you're not in it very often. I don't even get sunburns. I don't get sunburns, and I'm in the sun like 8 hours a day. My neck might get a little red, or if I'm out for an extra long time, I might have a little red tint to me, but I'm like a quarter Native American, so I get a red tint when I get sun. And even my tan is a little red. So, you know, I get a little bit, but I don't wear sunscreen. I don't wear a big hat blocking my face. I go work out in the sun 8 hours a day, 8 to 10 hours a day, and everything's fine. You know, and it's all about exposure. If you're inside all the time and then you go outside, it can mess you up pretty bad. But if it's like weaning somebody off of something. Well, you can wean yourself onto sunlight. You can just slowly expose yourself to more and more.
Basic. You just shut yourself into a house with one other person for for so long as soon as you go back out into the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd take me. I worked the whole way through this. I was deemed essential from the very start. You know, yeah, because people in Texas need swimming pools. You're essential. Well, you know, like
water sanitation is what it was called.
I got to go. I have to go build elevators for fucking, you know, when the whole 2 weeks to flatten the curve happened, I kept working at a data center, whether at a server farm for Shell Oil. You know, I mean, that's essential. Essential. But I never stopped working the whole time. And I'm working in a disgusting, dirty, filthy construction sites, using blue rooms to go to the bathroom and crawling around in the dirt and concrete dust and mud and nothing, working overtime.
Yep. I walked around to stores. I put my hands on, like, since I work in the pool business, I touch chlorine a lot. So I basically have bleach on my hand all the time. I'd walk around, go to stores, grab things out of coolers and whatever. I never wore a mask. I don't wash my hands unless I touch my chickens or raw chicken or, you know, something gross, like, you know, dog poo or something, or, you know, my kids, I still have kids in diapers. So, you know, I wash my hands after I deal with diapers. But like during my daily routine, I would rarely wash my, like physically wash my hands. I don't ever get sick. I haven't been really sick since I quit smoking over 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And once I quit smoking, I quit getting sick all the time.
We're basically doing what they told our moms to do when we were little kids, which was like, you know,
go play in the dirt.
Go play in the dirt, take your kids to go get chicken pox at the next door neighbor's house, like all that stuff, you know. And now it's like you can't, being a little bit sick is the scariest thing in the world. That's a question that I just thought that I've never even thought to ask somebody that's really, really Corona scared is just like, what do you think is going to happen to you if you catch coronavirus, especially with this new variant that is supposed to be extremely contagious and non-lethal? Like, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, it's insane. These people, like when I hear people that are still really scared, I'm like, what have you been doing for the past 2 years? How have you not had a little bit of curiosity and looked into some numbers, or, you know, listened to something opposing what you're listening to all the time? Like, what exactly are you listening to? Like, how do you still trust media? Like, mainstream media? How do you trust any of them? I mean, over the past decade, they've all been proven to be liars. All of them. There's no journalism left, and that ended a long time ago. There's no honest journalism, you know, so at least not in the mainstream. And maybe there never was, but, you know, I'd like to think it was a little more honest. I mean, now it's just all garbage. It doesn't matter if you're listening to Fox News. It doesn't matter if you listen to CNN, MSNBC, or even OAN or any of those other networks. If it's mainstream, even InfoWars, I think if it's mainstream, you can't trust it. You just can't trust it because it's controlled. All of these companies are owned by the larger conglomerates. You know, it's the difference between the exoteric and the esoteric. The esoteric is controlling the exoteric companies. You know, so the companies, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, there's the old adage, how could it be a lie that big? So many people would have to be in on it.
That's not necessarily true.
A lot of people could just be doing what they think is right because something's coming from a perceived authority. They don't need to be in on the scam to be part of it.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the ideology of a neocon, they're doing what they think is right. William Crystal doesn't think that he is evil.
Mm-mm.
Because he thinks what he's doing is beneficial to humanity.
That might be a bad example because I think he knows exactly what he's doing. I think that is just an evil, corrupt person. I think he plays the coy narrative very well. Like, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, all you had to do was watch that debate of his and
Scott Horton.
And man,
terrified of coronavirus.
Dude, yeah. Yes. Yes, he was. I don't know if he still is, but he was. But yeah, I mean, all of these people can be manipulated. Like the NASA engineer that's working on some special toilet that flushes the right way, that dude thinks his toilet's going to space. You know, yeah. He's not doing it going, oh, I've got to make the best fake one to pull one over on all these guys. Like, he actually thinks he's doing something. You know, yeah. So they just dupe all of these people into thinking, you know, the people that service the swimming pool and everything around the mock space station that's in a giant swimming pool.
Yeah.
Like, those people think they're just running experiments to later be run in space, not knowing that it's absolutely retarded to test in water if you're going to be doing it in space. They are two completely opposite atmospheres. In water, pressure is trying to get in. In space, it's trying to get out. You know, you can't, nothing's going to behave the same. If you're trying to work on the outside of the space station in water and you drop a wrench, when you go like this, it's going to go straight down. In space, it's apparently going to go wherever you let go of it, and it's going to go in that direction in a hurry. Like, yeah, it's forever. it's just not, and possibly increasing in velocity.
Yeah.
You know, if it gets grabbed by the atmosphere, and that's another thing, the space station is supposedly going around the Earth at 17,000 miles an hour. Just think about that number. That is over 17 times the speed of sound. But when something is being pulled around by a force, it increases in speed. It has to speed up. Eventually, that thing would be going so fast around the Earth, it would fly out of our orbit. Because it would increase in speed every rotation. The space station would go from 17,000 miles an hour to 18,000 miles an hour to 24,000 miles an hour. And it would just increase in speed because it has to. That's just physics. When something is being pulled in a direction on a curve, it increases its speed as it goes around the curve. And so that's why when cars are tested for the G-force that they can handle and they go on a what's called a skid pad, it's very hard to hold a constant speed in a circle to test the G-force in a car, because as you go around, your car is constantly increasing in velocity, even if you're holding your foot in the same position on the throttle. And that's just how it happens. It's in centrifugal force. And so centrifugal force would eventually just, the space station would be going so fast around the Earth, it would be just yanked out of the freaking atmosphere and hurled into space. And that's just basic physics. It can be proven by numbers. So
physics.
Right. Well, and you know, what's funny, what's ironic is, I got kicked out of an anarchist organization here in Austin because of the flat earth subject. And they said, I don't understand basic physics, but I know their model better than they know theirs. And I know physics better than they know physics. And I mean, I was even called a paranoid schizophrenic because I was like, I can prove the earth is flat. And I got called basically a crazy person. And I'm like, but I can prove it. Like, you're crazy for not even questioning. You know, I was in this group of anarchists. They're like, you know, we hate government. They lie to us about everything. Except this one thing. You know, I got kicked out of a group of anarchists for questioning government. How ironic is that?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know why people have such visceral reactions to this topic. I appreciate you just being chill. It's kind of what I expected from what I know about you. You're very calm mannered when it comes to controversial subjects, and you just kind of soak it all in. Now, whether or not I'm able to make you question the narrative and get you to come to this side, or whether or not you'll even admit it in public because of, you know, the discomfort, you know, I don't know if you'll ever admit that you're a flat earther. Even if you contain that in your head, I don't know that you'd ever say it out loud.
Well, I've got lots to think about, but
Yeah.
I'm not sure where I'm going to land yet.
Well, and that's you know, like I said, I didn't want to come to the end of this and, you know, I didn't want to be disappointed because I didn't convince you. I just want to give you things to look at. Like, check this stuff out. Constantly questioning.
You've given me a lot to look at.
And the number one thing, remember, number one thing, everything is parallel. Everything is parallel. So that's something that you can see in your everyday life, just driving around. You know, you see two water towers that are 5 miles apart. They should have a degree of curve between them, and they should be observably pointing away from each other. But they won't be. They'll be just like this every single time. Every single time.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. That was the one thing, because I'm constantly looking. The one thing that I looked at, and I was like, that is the definitive proof.
Well, right, it's understandable there. For somebody like me who doesn't get physics. And I mean, that is something that I can grasp and understand.
Right, because even simply, everybody knows what parallel means. You know, at least, you know, most adults know what parallel means. And then if I tell you everything is parallel and you go out in your everyday life and you start looking around and you're like, wait a minute, he was right. Everything is parallel. That's gonna make you start going, oh, crap. Okay. Because over a single mile, there should be 8 inches of curve, and that gets exponential the further you go.
Okay, I'm going to write that down. Over.
Yeah, the equation, like there's a very complicated equation for the curvature of the Earth. But what it breaks down to is 8 inches per mile squared. And that is spot on until about 1,000 miles. And then it starts getting off a little bit.
Because you start dropping down, right?
Because it's actually a parabola. That's the equation for a parabola, because eventually you'll come up and cusp and come down really quickly. But for the first 1,000 miles, it's spot on to the curve of the Earth.
Got it.
So you don't, and you don't need it for that long.
Does that make sense, Deborah?
No, can you say it?
Well, okay. It would have, the curvature would start to increase, because so you're coming up, like you're coming up over the ball, and then it's curving, and then it goes down, you know?
Yeah.
So it would be more.
So the actual calculation for the curvature of the Earth does an entire circle. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's how to calculate the entire circle. But 8 inches per mile squared would actually give you an arch, because there's a starting point and an ending point. So it would actually give you an arch. But for the first 1,000 miles of curvature of the Earth, 8 inches per mile squared works perfectly.
Okay.
There's a more complicated formula that if you wanted to calculate something more than 1,000 miles away, but there's really no reason to. I mean, you can work inside of 100 miles with 8 inches per mile squared, and it's exact to the more complicated formula. So it's just a simplified formula to use in short distances, so you don't have to always crack out some giant calculation to do something like 10, 20, 50 miles. If you just do 8 inches per mile squared, it's perfect for anything that's observable.
All right. I'm going to Google that so I can...
Duck, duck, go.
I say Google because it's like Kleenex, you know.
We've talked about that. It's a brand name, you know. It's like you can say you want Coke, but you could actually mean Mr. Pibb or Pepsi or something like that, or just soda in general. But Coke is the name, or Kleenex is the name. But yeah, so this has been fantastic. This is much better than my first episode, which was quite volatile.
Yeah.
If you want to check it out, Deborah, it's a fun one.
I will.
Because that dude really didn't like that I was questioning his narrative. And this is somebody that I really didn't expect that response from.
I still love really that guy, but yeah, it was surprising.
I really didn't expect it. You know,
okay, he didn't.
So, just stay intellectually curious. You know, regardless of where you end up landing in this particular debate, or even vaccines, viruses, just stay curious. That's what I love about you, is you're curious. You know, and with God, we could all learn from you. Society could learn from you and your curiosity and willingness to have conversations. A lot of people don't even want to have conversations. So your willingness just to get on with all of these people and have these, you know, for lack of a better term, controversial conversations is, I mean, you're better than most. Because you're at least willing to listen to it, well, you know, and listen to it with an open mind.
I try. You know,
so, you know, we can all learn something from Deborah.
Well, thank you for this educational.
Yeah, thanks for being on with me. Really, like I said at the beginning of the show, it's truly an honor to be able to talk to you and have this particular conversation with you.
Well, I might come up with more questions, so we might have to revisit this.
Send them my way. I'm happy to answer anything. If you have any questions before we part, you know, anything that's rolling around in your mind, feel free
to
ask.
It's all spinning now. It's all spinning.
Let it all settle and come up with a line of questions, and maybe we could have a revisit where we have you back on and you just throw questions at me. I'd be okay with that too.
I'd be fine with that. I'd be good with that.
Awesome.
Can we release this one too, Bob?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll send you the audio. Okay. Yeah. I'll put it out too.
Cool. As soon as my producer gets done with it,
I'll wait until you drop it to put it out on ours.
Okay. Well, I'm going to drop it as soon as it's produced. So as it's produced, I'll get the audio and I'll have it sent to you.
Great.
Awesome. I appreciate it, guys. If you guys want to plug your show, Adam, you want to plug stuff coming up or anything, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Just find, we got 3 podcasts on the Deborah Gets Red Pilled RSS feed. Check us out. I just did 2 hours with Michelle Gibson on Lewis and Clark and Tartaria today. It was amazing.
Wow.
And then I'm going on with Midnight Mike from OBDM tomorrow. And Deborah's coming on next Saturday. We're going to get into some tarot readings with some crazy tarot chick who channels Robert F. Kennedy a lot. She's done readings on whether or not Michelle Obama's transgender. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be way better than your normal tarot reading. So we'd love it if you check us out. And we got one with Bob a couple episodes ago too. So I'm glad we're friends, man. I like seeing you in the Telegram chat and talk to you all the time. So
It's been awesome. I tell people all the time, I've found my people.
Yeah,
it's taken me 43 years, but I finally found my
people. Yeah, in the heart of a pandemic when we're not allowed to see anybody, we've all found our community. Yeah,
people's true colors come out when pressure is applied.
Yep,
and
diamonds.
And some turn into diamonds and some turn into dust. So here we are. Guys, thanks, Adam. I'll talk to you soon, Deborah.
Yep.
I hope to see you soon too. I look forward to everything that's coming.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you.
Thanks.
Right on. Peace,
y'all.
Bro.
Have a good night. Later.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. That was my show with Deborah and Adam. Man, I love conversations like this. I really do. More people could be like Deborah. She's someone who isn't fully awake. I mean, she's a glober that vaccinates and wears a mask, but she's willing to have conversations. And that's better than most. Most people don't want to have conversations. And I love it that she is willing to go to these places and willing to question and willing to think later and like stew on things and let them kind of digest. I mean, God, we could all learn something from her. Even me, even somebody who, and I don't mean that arrogantly, I just consider myself a fairly enlightened and openly intellectual person, which I am. And I'm not done learning, if you consider yourself done learning, you are a fool. Nobody is ever done learning. So, God, her humility and just her energy. God, what a great person. I can't say enough about her. So thanks to Adam for talking to her and getting her on. And y'all go check out his stuff. He's doing amazing work. He's got great shows. Just check out Deborah Gets Red Pilled on all your podcatchers, and all his shows are in there. I don't know if he's going to split them eventually, but yeah, Deborah Gets Red Pilled alone is a fantastic show. So go check out some of your old stuff. It's great. And everything he's doing now is fantastic. So live free, mind and body, folks. And question everything. We've got to seek truth and live our principles and try to just be peaceful, enlightened beings. That is the way out of the matrix. That is the way to freedom. That is the way to peace. So with that, I bid you adieu. I'll see you on the next one.